Hello, everyone, and welcome to Working in the Weeds, a podcast from the Center for Aquatic and Invasive Plants at the University of Florida. I'm your host, Jay Farrell, and with me is our amazing co-host and communications manager, Christine Krebs.
Hey, everybody.
So today's episode is back by popular demand. It is the Working in the Weeds Trivia Edition. And this time we have three special guests with us because today is a special day. It is July 26th, and we are right in the middle of the 63rd Annual Aquatic Plant Management Society meeting in Indianapolis, Indiana. Since that meeting is going on, we thought it would be fitting to invite three board members to join us for trivia. We're going to ask each of them to introduce themselves, and we're going to start with our current president, Dr. Brett Hardis.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me on today. As Jay mentioned, I'm Brett Hardis. I work with Duke Energy Corporation in the southeastern United States. Lead our aquatic weed control program here with the company. And yeah, as Jay said, I'm the current president of APMS. So I'm excited to be here today.
Our next contestant is the great Amy Kay.
Hi there. Thanks for having me here today. I've been working in the world of aquatics for 16 years now, saving lakes all over the country, but primarily in the Midwest, and past director of APMS, and I currently sit on the board as a special rep for Women of Aquatics, which I'm the president and founder of.
Outstanding. And then our treasurer, Justin Naraki.
The money man is here. Thank you for inviting me, and if you've listened to past podcasts, I am the boat safety expert, so make sure your straps are tied down nice and tight. I currently work at UPL, a chemical manufacturer for herbicides for aquatics. I am a product development specialist / technical service manager, so happy to be here. Thanks, guys.
Well, fantastic. And guys, thank you for joining us today, but it's about time to get started. But before we do, let's talk about the rules of the game. You're going to be asked 9 questions out of 3 different categories that relate to plant facts, APMS facts, and boating facts. And then we'll conclude with a mystery question. So I will ask the question, ask you to reveal your answers, and if we are ready, let's play Working in the Weeds Trivia. First question. Dioecious hydrilla makes flowers. What month or months does it flower and why? So Dioecious hydrilla, the one that is common in the South, it does make flowers. What month or months does it flower and why? It's a very interesting plant, Christine. It flowers, but we only have the female version in this state. There is no male. So even though it flowers, it never makes seed. All right. And reveal your answer, starting with Justin Naraki.
May to June.
He says it flowers May to June. Okay. Next, Brett Hardis, reveal your answer.
Oh, man. I drew the worst blank on this, and all I can see is that horrible diagram that Rob Richardson used to make comparing Monoecious and Dioecious that was burnt into the back of my brain, but it's gone now. I said September, October.
Lots of excuses, not a lot of answers. September and October. All right, and next, Amy Kay.
I'm going to go with early spring, so sometime in the April zone, and that's just based on the timing of some treatments I've done for hydrilla in Florida. That's my only factoring in that guess.
Excellent answers, everyone. The actual answer is that Dioecious hydrilla flowers twice a year. It flowers in March and again in September when day and night length are exactly 12 hours. That's when it flowers, spring and fall. So we give 1 point for Amy Kay, 1 point for Dr. Hardis, no points for Justin Naraki. We are off with a bang. Second question. Do water hyacinth flowers require insect pollination to make seed? Water hyacinth, the common floating plant that is a scourge in South America, Asia, as well as in the United States, reproduces by clonal reproduction as well as seed. But do the flowers, those big purple flowers, require insect pollination? Yes or no? All right, this is a quick one. It's either a yes or a no. We're going to start with Dr. Hardis. Reveal your answer.
I'm showing my regional bias here. We don't deal with hyacinth much. So I'm going to say no and say just based on the growth habit, maybe it's wind driven.
The first answer is no. All right, let's see how that stacks up. Amy Kay.
I also was going with no. With some other regional bias.
A second no. Yeah, none of you guys are in the hyacinth belt. We have two no's. Justin Naraki, where are we?
I think I'm going to do the prices right. I'm going to go with the $1 bid. So I'm going to say yes.
We've got one yes and two no's. The answer is no. This invasive plant has very few insects that visit the flower. The only one that really does is the European honeybee, but it is not required for pollination because this plant self-pollinates. So 1 point for Dr. Hardis, 1 point for Amy Kay, and again, a big squadoo for Justin Naraki. Question three. Now, let's get out of the regional bias here. So this is a more national question. I have four plants listed below. All of them are listed as federal noxious weeds except one. Which of these is not listed as noxious? A, Hydrilla verticillata, also known as hydrilla. B, Azolla pinnata, or feathered mosquito fern. Number three, Myriophyllum spicatum, Eurasian water milfoil. Number four, Limnophila sessiflora, also known as Limnophila. Which one of those four is not on the federal noxious weed list? Three of them are, one of them is not. So really quick, Hydrilla, Azolla pinnata, Myriophyllum spicatum, or Eurasian water milfoil, or Limnophila sessiflora. Which one is not on the noxious weed list? All right, it looks like all of the writing has stopped, and I am going to start with Amy Kay.
I'm just going to go with the fourth one because I don't know what that is.
All right, so Limnophila sessiflora for Amy Kay. Next, Justin Naraki.
Azolla.
Azolla pinnata for Justin Naraki. All right. And number three, Brett Hardis.
I'm going to have to go with Limnophila on this one.
Limnophila again. So of those four species, the one that is not currently listed as federally noxious is Myriophyllum spicatum or Eurasian water milfoil. Believe it or not, wow. Hydrilla is listed, Azolla pinnata is listed, Limnophila sessiflora is listed, Myriophyllum spicatum is not. One of the worst weeds of the Midwest, and it is not listed as federally noxious.
Wow. One of the earliest introductions, too.
Absolutely. Makes you wonder why it's not, but it is not. But again, water hyacinth isn't listed either. One of the worst weeds in the world. So it's not always lining up with the way you would think. All right, so no points for anyone on that one. So the good news is we're finished with plant facts, and our current score is 2 points for Brad Hardis, 2 points for Amy Kay, no points for Justin Naraki, but the game is still young. We are now transitioning from plant facts into the Aquatic Plant Management Society facts, and the first question, what was the original name of APMS? We changed our name. What was the original name of APMS? And a bonus point, what year did they first meet? So, the Aquatic Plant Management Society has changed its name from what it was originally founded as. What was the name as they were founded? And what year was the first meeting? All right. It looks like
I got this one in the bag, man.
Oh, we've got some confidence. So we'll start with the guy that says he's got it in the bag, Brett Hardis.
Let this be correct. The Hyacinth Control Society, 1961.
Hyacinth Control Society, 1961. All right, Amy Kay, what say you?
Hyacinth Control Society, Inc., 1961.
Mm. She's trying to angle for a third point with Inc. Got it. And Justin Naraki.
Concur with my counterparts, so... Exactly.
I think somebody just stole an answer from the two people that came before him. Justin looks like the oldest of a couple of different children in his family, so that means he always made up the rules of the game. So I think Justin's making up the rules here as he goes.
Youngest. That's the smartest.
That's an interesting strategy, Cotton. Let's see how it pays off for him.
The right answer is Hyacinth Control Society, 1961. 2 points for everyone across the board. Very well done. I figured you guys would get the name. I did not expect you to get the year. All right. Next question, APMS Facts. The Society every year sponsors the Michael D. Netherland Graduate Student Research Grant. And this is a $20,000 a year research grant that is given to graduate students at some university. The current student is Alyssa Anderson, from Minnesota State University at Mankato. What plant is she working on?
Oh, gosh.
So, Alyssa Anderson from Minnesota State University at Mankato is the current recipient of the Michael D. Netherland Graduate Student Research Grant from APMS. What plant is she working on? So, you got to think here, what would be an important plant for Mankato?
We read this proposal, Brett. You and I did.
I know. That's what's embarrassing about this.
I knew you guys would have seen it. It has been published in the newsletter, and she's in the second year of this grant. So,
oh gosh.
All right. You got to write something down, everybody. No more tormenting yourself. It's time to write. Here, we're going to start with Justin Naraki.
If I'm not mistaken, I think it's Coontail.
One for Coontail. Next, Amy Kay.
I'm not sure what Alyssa's working on, but another one of her counterparts in Dr. Wurzel's lab is working on Cuban bulrush. I know that.
One for Cuban bulrush. All right. And third, Brett Hardis.
All right. I'm just going to shoot from the hip because I feel like this is all those folks know up there. I'm going to say Eurasian watermill fall.
That is the answer that we were expecting one of you to give, but all three of you have proven incorrect. Alyssa's is working with parrot feather, and the title of her project is The Photosynthetic Ecology of Parrot Feather, Myriophyllum Aquaticum, and the Implications for Future Spread.
Half points for same genus? No?
Absolutely no, and if you keep pandering to the judge, you might take a point away. So... That will get you nowhere.
Man. Does Brett have his camera off because he's cheating now?
That's it. No, I keep losing you guys for some reason. You keep freezing on me, so I thought maybe turning my video off would help.
Yeah. Well, feel free to look up things. I don't think you're going to get to the right answer that way either. So, all right. We are now the third question in APMS Facts. So, since... the Working in the Weeds podcast is from the University of Florida. This is a UF APMS tie-in question. How many University of Florida faculty members have been president of APMS?
Oh, gosh.
How many University of Florida faculty members have been the president of APMS? Now, where you get a point for being closest, and you don't have to know the names, but how many faculty members have been president of the APMS Society? All right. I don't see writing. And I'm going to just go ahead and give you one. I'm counting Mike Netherland, even though he was Army Corps of Engineers. He was stationed here with us, and he was president while he was here. So there's at least one. So I'm going to spot you guys 1 point on the board.
That's good, because he was the one I was counting.
Excellent. All right. So let's start with Brett Hardis. How many University of Florida faculty members have been president of APMS?
I'm going basic math here and say in 60-ish years, at least a third. So 20.
We got a vote for 20. All right. Justin Naraki.
I get extra points if I say not enough.
You're going backwards. I'm going to start taking away for pandering. Trust me.
All right. So I'm going to list them. I think Haller, Big Mac, McDonald. You're not president yet. Langland was one. I'm trying to think who else would have been. Mike, obviously. And I know I'm probably missing a few, so I'm going to say 7.
7. All right. So we've got one vote for 20, one for 7. Amy Kay.
5.
You didn't even split the difference, Amy. Come on.
Under.
I said like 10 or 15.
All right. So what we have is 1 point for Justin Naraki, 1 point for Amy Kay, because you're both one off. The correct answer is 6. There have been 6 University of Florida faculty members, and they were Dave Sutton from Fort Lauderdale, Joe Joyce, director of the center, Randall Stocker, director of the center, Allison Fox, Greg McDonald, and Mike Netherland.
Haller was never president?
Haller was never president, nor was Langland.
I gave the University of Florida more credit, just like, you know, most football commentators in the early fall.
Ooh, I think that's 1 point off of Brett Hardis. For we're on hard times at the football program, and we don't need that kind of bad juju. All right. So, Christine, give us a rundown of our current scores.
So we have Brett Hardis at 4 points, Amy Kay at 5 points, and Justin Naraki at 3 points.
All right, we are more than halfway through the game, and Amy Kay is. Got a commanding lead over the president and treasurer at this point. All right. Now we are moving into boat facts. This is our last set of questions. So the first question in boat facts, who invented the first airboat and why? Who invented the first airboat and what was the purpose for that invention? I'm seeing a lot of frustration on the fact of people that have used airboats their whole life. They're wondering why they've never asked this question of themselves. Why have they never put it into Wikipedia? We have one feverishly writing that looks angry. We have one staring off, shaking their head out into space. And one is just smiling, thinking, yeah, this is a pointless question. All right. So, who invented the first airboat and why? We're going to start with Amy Kay.
Well, I have no idea. I would guess the reason why would be to get, you know, over a very shallow or lack of water area to get to the next.
All right. Very functional answer.
I've ridden on an airboat one time and that has been my exposure.
All right, next, Justin Naraki.
Oh, if I had to guess, his name was two names together with a hyphen. So I'm thinking Billy Bob. And I wouldn't have a last name, but I'm also guessing because it had never been done before and he needed one of those hold my beer and watch this kind of moment. For the family reunion. So he probably showed up with this thing.
So a centerpiece for a hillbilly family reunion.
Absolutely.
And Brett Hardis.
So I don't know how y'all missed this. This is probably one of the more common historical groups. It was the Not So Right Brothers that built the airboat. And it was for gator hunting and other Florida man associated activities.
Very close and far away. So the correct answer was that the first airboat was developed and built in 1905 by no other than Alexander Graham Bell of telephone fame. The reason it was developed was so that they could test engines for airplanes prior to flight. So if the engine's going to die, you'd much rather be in a boat than be in the air. So they were using them for aircraft tests. And then the first operational use was by the British military in 1915 as they were performing reconnaissance on the Tigris River, and they found that the boats could travel 55 miles an hour. So that is why the airboat was created. It was later on that Billy Bob took it to the family reunion and used it for alligator hunting. So those are all fringe benefits of the great Alexander Graham Bell's invention. All right. Next question, boat facts, and this is a big one, guys. This is a four-point question, so you need to get your stuff together here. All right, so according to the U.S. Coast Guard, freshwater boats between 16 and 26 feet with an outboard engine, all right, so these are the types of boats you would use for surveying, they must have four pieces of safety equipment on board at all times. What are those four pieces of safety equipment that are required? So, according to the Coast Guard, freshwater boats between 16 and 26 feet with an outboard engine must have four pieces of safety equipment. You get 1 point for every right answer. What are your four pieces of required safety gear?
God, I'm stuck.
I guarantee you, all of you are going to get two or three, and you're all going to forget one of them. I've asked this question to almost everyone in the office, and everyone has gotten three of them except Christine. Believe it or not, she got all four.
The boats at the dock are too far to see right now. Can I?
All right. With that, let's start. Justin Naraki, what are the four pieces of safety equipment that are required by the Coast Guard?
Personal flotation device. Fire extinguisher, and I'm saying probably like a visual distress, like a flare gun or something along those lines. And then probably something that makes noise, so like a whistle.
All right. So I've got it listed. All right. Next, Amy Kay.
I've got horn, fire extinguisher, flare, and a throwable PFD.
All right. I've got those listed. And next, Brett Hardis.
I'm not going to cheat here, but so throw cushion, fire extinguisher, whistle or signaling device, and my fourth was PFD. But I think Amy may have taken this one.
All right. So each of you got part of them. None of you got all four. So what I've gotten is two from Justin, two for Amy Kay, three for Brett Hardis. But here are the four things. Number one, a life jacket for every member on the boat. Number two, a tossable float. Number three, navigation lights. All of you forgot navigation lights.
Nav lights.
Almost wrote lights, but I thought, well, doesn't that come with it?
And number four, a signaling device such as a whistle. So, or a horn or any type of noise making device. So fire extinguishers are not required for that size boat. So those are the four things. Life vest, a tossable, signaling device, and nav lights. Those are the four things that you must have.
Dr. Farrell, if I'm not mistaken, I believe somebody in this group said they were the safety expert at the beginning of this talk.
Yeah, so how to tie your boat down, not how to safely
use it. Might want to reconsider.
Well, if I need somebody to put straps on a boat, I know absolutely who to not call. So we do have that safety part locked in. All right. Last question on boat safety. When passing a slower boat, you should pass on the right side, the left side, or it doesn't matter. So when passing a slower boat, you pass on the right, you pass on the left, or you pass on the safest side. What is the right answer? And by the way, I got into this. I started reading about the burdened vessel, the unburdened vessel. I got very confused, but I did finally find someone who broke it down in Kentucky lingo that I could understand. So when passing a slower boat, you pass on the right, the left, or the safest side. We're going to start with Amy Kay.
I'm going to say the safest side.
We've got one vote for the safest side. Justin Naraki.
Well, this is kind of, I think I need more information. And is the boat coming at me? Is it going across? Am I behind it? Come on, I need some more information here.
The answer is all three of those don't matter. Do you pass on the right, the left, or the safest side?
Safest side.
And Brett Hardis.
I feel like you wouldn't have added safest side unless it was the safest choice. So I'm going to go with the safest side.
That is correct. The answer is the safest side. There are all sorts of maritime laws on the size of vessels. If you're ocean going, to Justin's point, if you're going perpendicular, parallel, but at the end of the day, you pass on the safest side. Well done. That means it's all the safest side. All right, now we are down to the last question. This is the mystery question and a quick review of the points. We have Brett Hardis with 8. We have Amy Kay with 8. Justin Naraki coming in strong with 6. So we are down to the mystery question. So, and we also have a tiebreaker in the hopper to see if it stays tied. But question number 10, mystery question. What year was the herbicide Diquat first marketed in the U.S.?
Gosh.
What year was the herbicide Diquat first marketed in the U.S.? This has been a cornerstone herbicide in the aquatic market and specialty market for a very long time. It is used for floating plant management. It is used for control of submersed plants. So it is kind of the Swiss Army knife in a lot of ways for herbicides in aquatic environments. So, what year was it first marketed in the United States?
For aquatic use or marketed at all?
Marketed at all. What year did it to the marketplace?
Oh, man. I feel like Naraki has a shortcut on his desktop for something like this. So, everybody watch his fingers.
Well, yeah, it's called this right here. The old noodle there.
All right. So, what year was the herbicide Diquat first marketed in the U.S.? We'll start with Justin Naraki.
Much like every other good thing that's happened in the past 40 years, I think it probably happened in the 80s. So, I'm going to go in the middle, 85.
1985. Brett Hardis.
Oh, man. I'm having flashbacks of looking through the AARF handbook and seeing the dates next to some of these. I know it's post-copper. I'm going to say 1964.
All right. We've got one vote for 85, one vote for 64. Amy Kay.
Can you see this? I put 1964 on my...
Stop it.
Where?
Tell me we're right, Amy.
All right.
So I have no idea. That was a guess.
All right. You guys are super close, and you both get a point. But the correct year was 1962. So,
yes. Amy, that's fantastic.
Diquat predated Paraquat, which came out a few years later, even though they're very closely related. And it was brought to market by ICI, or the Imperial Chemical Industry. So that is who first brought it to market. All right, so we have now a tiebreaker among us. We've got Hardis at 9, Amy Kay at 9, Naraki at 6. So now for our tiebreaker question. Can you name the first two presidents of APMS?
Oh, God.
Who were the first two presidents of APMS? We've already talked about it was started as the Hyacinth Control Society in 1961. So my question is, who was the president in 1961? Who was the president in 1962? I see some writing. I see some confusion. Justin, take your time. This question's not for you. All right. Who was the first two presidents of APMS, then known as the Hyacinth Control Society. All right, Amy Kay, what is your answer?
Well, I have the first one, Alfred S. Chipley, is 1961, and I have no idea who 1962 was.
All right, Brett.
Okay, so I know the first one is T. Wayne Miller, but I have no clue on the second one. I'm going to take a shot in the dark, and the older folks are going to be mad at me, guessing that it's somebody we've named something after, so maybe Max McGowan.
All right. So the correct answer is, in 1961, the president was T. Wayne Miller. In 1962, the president was T. Wayne Miller. He served two terms back to back, just like George Washington. He said two terms were enough, even though people were wanting him to serve three or four. But T. Wayne Miller served back to back terms in 1961-62. Bret Hartis gets 1 point for the win. He ends up with 10 total points. Amy Kay at 9, Justin Naraki at 6. And guys, this brings us to the conclusion of Working in the Weeds Trivia APMS Edition.
Woohoo!
Thanks, everybody.
So, folks, y'all remember this.
Well, guys, thank you all for participating with us today. This was great, and I look forward to enjoying the rest of the meeting with you.
Thanks for listening to Working in the Weeds. If you have any questions or ideas for the podcast, email us at caip@ifis.ufl.edu. That's cape@ifis.ufl.edu. You can stay connected with CAPE on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at UFIFIS CAPE. And stay tuned for next episode as we continue to turn science into solutions.